the Chronic Life Podcast, where life is lived well. And now your hosts, Dr. Kevin Payne and Don Peterson.
Welcome to the Chronic Life Podcast. I'm Don Peterson. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Payne.
Hello.
And so this is, I think, a fourth or fifth in the series of podcasts that we're doing on how to deal with chronic conditions as a patient, caregiver, family member. And, you know, I'm sure that everyone has their own story. They know people that they've dealt with in their own lives that have battled with chronic conditions. And, you know, the last episode, Kevin, we talked a lot about patient advocacy. And that broke down into a variety of topics. You know, how do you talk to your doctor? How do you share your frustration and sometimes anger with the system and your the way your physician tends to spend a little bit less time with you than you'd hope? We talked about the insurance companies and how challenging they can be in terms of, you know, figuring out what your benefits are and what they're paying for and what they're not paying for and what you're eligible for and what you're not. And, you know, we talked a lot about your attitude when you're doing that. And I think it would be great if we reviewed a little bit of some of the things we talked about, like I think the concept I introduced of, you know, either you're a victim or you're in warrior mode. And I know we talked a little bit about why those extremes aren't necessarily good for you individually. And maybe, Kevin, we just review really quickly what a more temperate response would be in a system that is stacked, you know, so heavily against you.
Well, obviously, as patients, when we walk into the system, we have no leverage. And yet, it is something that is absolutely critical to us. All of the advantages are on the side of the system, and all of the costs and the risks are on our side. That makes it really frustrating and really uncomfortable. And so we have to understand that the environment is something that's just not conducive to us easily getting what we need out of it. And so part of that is us needing to adopt a different attitude. And you're right, you know, we talked about how the victim versus warrior attitude is, you know, on the one hand, it's fraught with emotion. And that's never a good place to drive your communications. Those responses, those roles are deeply rooted in our biology, in the biology of our threat response. So when we tap into that victim mode or we tap into that warrior mode, we're tapping into our biological responses of fawn and fight. And so we don't want to do that either. But what we do want to do is be firm. We want to be immovable, and we want to be that strong, competent advocate for ourselves. So we want to do our homework beforehand, and it's not that we're going to become medical professionals, but we want to understand the kinds of questions that they're going to need answered to, and we want a very clear understanding of the kinds of questions we need answers to. We want to write that down, and we want to be prepared, and we want to go in there, and we're not going to take no. And one of the things that I find really exciting from that discussion and how that leads into what we're going to talk about today is the burden of self-advocacy can become so overwhelming over time that we need help. We need support. We need somebody who may be a little more versed in the system, who can come in and help us and teach us and make sure that we get what we need.
Kevin, I think those are all great points. And frankly, I remember from the last episode, you know, one of the things I think I said that I hope people will remember from that episode is, you know, never take anything personally. The system is really stacked against you, but not just you. It's really stacked against everybody. They're not picking on you in particular. So responding with an emotional response isn't really, you know, effective in terms of long-term getting things done and your own personal well-being. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back from break, we're going to introduce our guest today, Caressa Hutchinson from Modern Health. I talked a little bit about her and Modern Health a little bit on the last podcast, and she has, as Kevin suggested, some really interesting ways of helping you to advocate for yourselves, within the healthcare system and with your providers and such, and we'll come back and we'll talk more in detail with Caressa when we come back from the break.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to Just Jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Welcome back. Again, I'm Don Peterson. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Payne. And on this episode, we're talking about patient advocacy. And in the last podcast, I think I mentioned a company by the name of Modern Health. And so with us today in the studio is Caressa Hutchinson, the CEO and founder of Modern Health. Welcome.
Welcome, Caressa.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you in the studio. And I think it gives us an opportunity to talk a little bit in more in depth about, you know, what do patients deal with as they're encountering the system, especially if they're diagnosed with a chronic condition or something that may not be resolvable for, you know, a long period of time, and they've got to deal with physicians and the insurance company and maybe hospital stays and care management people. You just encounter a lot of different folks along the way. Where does Modern Health fit into that ecosystem, and I guess how would you best describe the value that, you know, your service and product is creating?
Well, Modern Health is a software solution that partners a nurse advocate with each member to really get to know them and walk them through all of those different hurdles that they face in healthcare. And then we also combine all of the resources and tools to be your own advocate into one platform and one place to really empower patients.
And while you're doing that, are you helping people to interface with, is it just the medical community or other sort of aspects of the community, facets of the community, like their health insurance or?
Sure. So I'll back up a little bit and just talk about why I started Modern Health. Yeah. I am a registered nurse, and I was working in the hospital system. When I first started working as a nurse and I started, you know, really investing in patients, often I'm spending 2 or 3 days at a time with one patient, and really just getting invested in them and getting to care about them. And then it comes time for discharge, and I'm sending them out the door after doing, you know, shoving all this teaching down their throats, basically, and hoping that some of it is sticking while they're already going through a very emotional time, right? A real struggle already. And now we've given them all this extra information on how to manage it and handle it, and basically a pat on the back and good luck.
Pat on the back or a kick in the back?
Time is up. You got to be out before midnight. Yes.
Yeah,
that's a real thing. So, you know, that didn't set well with me as a person, because I am a people person. I care about people. That's why I got into nursing in the first place. I knew that that wasn't right. And the longer I was in nursing, the more my fears kind of came to pass, where those same patients that I knew weren't equipped to handle what we were asking them to handle were coming back into me and being readmitted, or, you know, they were just as sick, or I would see them out in the city and I would hear these horror stories of them trying to navigate the system. And, you know, it just really bothered me that we were investing so much time and energy while they're here in our care, and then we're just supposed to let them go and essentially land flat on their face a lot of times.
Oh, I believe that.
Right. I'm really fascinated in these origin stories. So was there one aha moment when you suddenly, you know, something tripped and you had this, or was it a slow build?
Sure. It was a slow build, but there were several the same kind of stories, like, you know, people being readmitted and learning about all this testing and poking and prodding that happened in the ER. At the time I got them up on the floor, I knew the patient. I knew they had just had those tests done, or we had just ordered that at a physician's office maybe a few weeks before, and now they've been, you know, re-poked and prodded, retested, recharged for all of those things because we didn't have access to the test that we, you know, charged them for 2 weeks ago. So there were a lot of those things. It actually infuriated me to the point where I'm a big I can change things, just watch me. So I just started going to the hospital boards and started really expressing what was going on and, you know, really tried to get some kind of program built within the community. Working with the hospital system, I just should have been hitting myself against the wall, really, because that's, you know, that's the feedback I was getting.
Yeah, well, you know, we just told everybody, don't get emotionally involved, and here you are.
Well,
you know,
I'm getting emotionally involved for other people, right?
Well, I mean, it's still an emotional response. I think that, like we talked about in the last episode, trying not to get emotional about things that affect you so dearly, mm-hmm. it's almost an impossible ask. I mean, I understand, you know, we talk about don't get personally, you know, don't take it personally, and you know, don't get emotional, but you really can't help it. It is extraordinarily personal, is it not?
Right, and I want to emphasize, this is not about squashing down those emotions when they come out. I mean, you've got to acknowledge them, mm-hmm. and you've got to live them, and they're part of your experience. It's a matter of you can't try to get yourself up into that all of the time, because it's the repeatedly going there that's going to get you. So when it naturally bubbles up, you know, you want to do that and you want to use it for what it's worth, but realize it's a limited resource and it's not necessarily the best way.
And you're not going to change things that way.
Right.
So that was more of an internal, you know, emotion. And then, okay, how do I go talk to the hospital board? What are their concerns? How am I going to meet their needs too? How do I make this beneficial for them? You're right. You have to collectively gather yourself, and you have to just internalize that and use it as your drive to empower yourself, I think.
And I can tell you, I mean, just, you know, we've talked about this before, but I've had like 3 major surgeries annually for the last 3 years. And you know, on that day that you're leaving the hospital after a 2 or 3 day stay, and you've had, you know, a serious surgery, and you've been put under a general anesthetic, and, you know, you're on pain meds and things like that. And then the patient educators come in, and they start yammering.
Mm-hmm.
I literally cannot connect 2 sentences. I couldn't even, I think, come up with a reasonable question if I
Right.
could even put my brain together to think of one. So I think a lot of it is the people who are there to absorb that information, us as patients or even our caregivers, like my wife. I mean, when I left the hospital last time, she literally asked the doctor, whoever came in to talk to us, do you mind if I record this? Because
Absolutely.
You get home and you're like, what did they say about this?
Mm-hmm.
Or they give you some piece of paper that's meant for everybody, but they only checked a couple of boxes for you, and you don't know if all of those things on the list apply to you, but just maybe the check boxes. And it is confusing. It is daunting. I mean, you really,
right.
and you're not in any frame of mind to be listening to people yammer on about stuff they're so familiar with using their terminology, and you somehow have to synthesize that into, well, what do I do when I get home?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, I think those are the challenges that, you know, I understand from a caregiver provider perspective, and I've been on that side at Infusion Express, that you would expect people, you know, look, this is your care, right? This is your condition. This is your problem. You need to help be a part of fixing this. But when they come in at the end of a 3-day hospital stay after a major surgery or procedure, it's a little hard to absorb that information.
Yeah, you're not in the right state of mind to absorb that at all. The next jump for me wasn't, I'm going to start a business. I'll be honest, not something I'd ever considered doing. So the next jump for me after, you know, not being able to actually help at the hospital level was really my heart was just broken for these people, and I was frustrated. The system that I was, you know, part of in order to help people was failing these people, and I almost saw myself as part of that. And I didn't like the way that made me feel. Being the, you know, big rule breaker that I am, apparently, I just started handing out, you know, my own phone number to these patients.
Wow.
So
see, we at Infusion Express, we had a few nurses do that, and
it's kind of against the rules.
I've seen that backfire. I mean, where, you know, especially for the female nurses, you know, getting text messages and
sure.
unwanted phone calls and things like that. I think there's a risk in doing
it's
that.
It's a huge risk, and I don't advocate for it either.
Yeah,
I definitely don't think you know. You're right. There's a huge risk for that. So I guess that kind of shows the state of mind that I was in, which is feeling, you know, heart was so driving. Overwhelmed, you yeah. know. I'll also say during this time I was working in pediatrics. So it was a lot of parents that were, you know, just, I see that look on their face, like, this is my child's health. I have this plan and I have all of these things that I need to manage when I get home. You just see it in their face. It doesn't matter their education level. It doesn't matter how much money they have. This is something that's foreign and new to them. And, you know, somebody they really care about, counts on their ability to execute.
Yeah, I think, you know, the serious part about especially pediatric care at an acute care level is hard, really hard on everybody involved, parents especially, of course the child, but even for caregivers, providers, you know, doctors, nurses, it's really tough. I have a good friend, Dr. Kim Gandy. Dr. Gandy started a company called Play It Health, so I'm going to plug her company. And I don't know exactly the web address, but I think it's Play It Health. She trained at Stanford as a pediatric cardiac transplant surgeon. And, you know, talk about, you know, an acute problem that mm-hmm. has a serious, you know, protocol post-op and even pre-op, actually. And she created this Play It Health because there were so many parents who were not keeping their kids adherent to their anti-rejection medications and other medications that were necessary for them to assimilate the transplant organ. I mean, kids were dying. And it was only, well, not only, and I don't ever want to, you know, ascribe less than, you know, total care on the part of a parent, but, you know, when you're not feeling sick, everything is going pretty well, and it's a huge inconvenience and or a huge expense to access whatever those medications are. You know, you're trying to rationalize in your head why they don't need it. And unfortunately, the consequence of that poor decision leads to rejection, which leads to, well, sometimes the ultimate outcome.
We are often not a very good friend to our future selves. You know, as we're heading into wrapping up this particular segment, something Don said kind of triggered a question for me, and it's, can you give us, to help our listeners out, some concrete examples of the kinds of challenges that you most commonly help those patients with?
Sure. So when I created Modern Health, it's basically, you know, I scaled myself. I made myself and what I was doing to help these patients outside of the hospital, right? So the kind of stuff that I was helping them with then was, and continue to do now through our software and partnership with a nurse, none of it is, you know, really mind-blowing. It's very common sense information. Like you talked about, someone leaves the hospital or they leave an appointment and they weren't in the right frame of mind to really absorb all the information. So now they're at home, they're starting to put it in practice, and, you know, they forgot 70% of what their doctor said. And it was a hospital doctor, so now who do I call? I'm calling the primary doctor, but they don't have my hospital records yet. And now they want me to get this medication that they didn't tell me was going to be $1,200. I assume that it's, you know, I'm going to Walmart, which is already the, you know, I just associate with being cheap or less expensive, and that's not necessarily the case. So they don't really have any of those tools to be able to navigate, how do I get this medication? And like what Dawn talked about with non-adherence, you know, I'm a little sensitive to that just because so many patients that I took care of had that non-adherence mark on their chart. And it wasn't necessarily that they were just non-compliant and didn't care about their health. It was they just did not have the resources to take care of that. You know, we're a whole person. We have a lot going on in our life, and there's obstacles that, you know, people face that they may not be willing to share with you in a quick 10-minute appointment. So building that trust and building that relationship with them so they're actually able to share some of those obstacles, you can actually help them, you know, get through those obstacles. That's huge. You know, like you talked about, just being empowered and being prepared. We walk through with our members before they go to appointments and before they have things, procedures or appointments, just so we can really help them to understand what is the goal that I'm trying to get out of this appointment? What are the questions? On average, you have 7 minutes with the doctor. So you need to go in being your own best advocate and knowing this is the information I need, and I need to understand it, and I need to know how I can actually act on it. So
when we come back, we'll talk in more detail about some of those specifics, Carissa. Thank you. And I'm sure Kevin has more questions, as do I. So we'll be back in just a bit.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
I'm Dr. Kevin Payne, and I'm here with my co-host Don Peterson, and we are back and chatty with Carissa Hutchinson, founder of Modern Health. And one of the things that I'm curious about is, because like me, you're a very purpose-driven entrepreneur, and there's a very personal story in this. What is it that you're trying to achieve out of this company? You know, as Modern Health becomes a rousing success, how will that change the way the world looks?
Absolutely. Well, I've told you a little bit about my personal story, and just the ability I had to be able to connect with people and really see a change in the experience that they were having. So for me, this is all about getting that to more people. It's about people that are struggling with their health or will be struggling with their health at some point, having a place to turn. I don't want people falling through the cracks. I don't want people feeling alone and not knowing where to turn. Healthcare is important. This is people's lives that we're talking about, and we want to give them a way to not just feel alone and lost in the system, which often, ends up creating non-activity. I mean, it freezes people. They're completely overwhelmed and they're frozen and they do nothing because they're just frozen. So this gives them a voice. It gives them a place to start. It gives them a way to feel empowered and feel like they have choices.
Well, I think we can all agree that people are debilitated by just how daunting the whole system is. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a person that has diabetes and you feel like nothing I ever do matters, I've tried to do different things, it all ends up the same. What's the point? Then I'm completely unengaged and I'm frozen. We want to come along and give you the next steps, give you some options, give you some educated choices to be able to make the best decision for you, to unfreeze you.
So what is it that Maybe this is something that's arisen from all of the interactions you've had with particular patients, but what is it that you wish more patients and more providers knew? Could be different things, but what do you wish they knew?
Sure. So for patients, I think that you've already touched on a lot of it. It has to do with you have to come to the realization that assumptions don't work in healthcare. So you can't assume that your doctor, knows what kind of insurance you have, that your doctor, your primary doctor and your specialist are all, on a call every night discussing and, coordinating your care. That's just not happening.
They're probably not besties.
Right. So as much as they all care about your health, it's not this coordinated effort that's going on. Although there's policy changes in place and there's lots of people like me trying to make healthcare better, our system right now is broke. And there's no magic, knight that's going to come in and rescue your healthcare for you. You have to get empowered. You have to become an advocate for yourself. You have to get educated on the resources that are out there. And you have to find a way to kind of dig deep and, be your own advocate.
So it's really up to you to connect the dots.
It is.
I mean, the system is so complex. I mean, I got an EOB, an explanation of benefits from my insurance company the other day, and it was billing me twice for the same thing because I know what CPT codes are, so I could see that.
Right.
Most people don't know what those are.
Exactly.
But they're the procedure codes that are on the bill, and they tell you what thing that they billed for and how much. But it was the same thing twice. And it just so happens that my daughter works for an anesthesiology EMR company. So I asked her, I said, Sam, what how do they bill me twice for the same thing? She goes, oh, no, one was the anesthesiologist, and the other one was the nurse anesthetist doing the same thing.
Why didn't you know that?
It's like, well, how would I know that, right? So the average person looking at a bill would be even more confused than probably I was, but I was still confused by it, and I know this system reasonably well. And I can imagine that there are lots of little points like that along the way, no matter whether your condition is episodic and is, you know, got a beginning and an end, or whether it's the infinite battle against, you know, chronic disease for the rest of your life. There are going to be dots are standing out there all by themselves, and you're really not sure how to connect them. And I guess
absolutely
why you need modern health and a solution like yours makes perfect sense, because you can't even understand all the dots to begin with, let alone how they're connected. Right.
I actually like to liken that to buying groceries and not getting, you know, you don't get the price of anything. You're checking out, you have no idea what the price is, and they're just smiling, saying, all right, we'll send you a bill. You know, yeah. we would never be okay with that. We would never be okay with that. So why is that okay in healthcare? Yes, we're not just advocates in understanding the health information, but we also absorb what all resources you have available. So if you have insurance, you know, we're going to learn that insurance for you to help you be able to use it to the best of your ability. As well as when you get a bill that you don't understand, we're going to help you understand it so you have the information you need, you know, to again, be an advocate for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction when I saw this bill was, well, I'm calling the anesthesiology practice and saying, hey, what the heck is this? You billed me twice for the same thing. And I thought, before I call, I better make sure I don't sound stupid, right? So I have to go do this research on my own. Of course, you know, I'm thankful my daughter knew the answer to the question. But if I didn't have a daughter who would know the answer to the question, I'd still be Googling this thing looking for an answer.
Or
I
you probably would have just paid it and not even,
well,
you know,
yeah.
you may not have ever even questioned it.
But, you know, it turns out that the bill from the anesthesiologist collectively is more than the surgeon billed me. So the putting me under enough to do the surgery costs more than the surgery.
That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, this is where I think we get emotional about it, because it's like you said about going into the grocery store. You know, to me, I used to liken it to going into the restaurant. You don't know what's on the menu. They bring you some food. You have to eat what they're serving.
Yep.
They're not going to spend any time with you explaining what it is that they're actually serving you. So you need to kind of figure it out on your own. And then, oh, we'll send you a bill about a month from now at home. And then you get the bill and you go, wait a minute. I don't even remember having peas, but they're billing me for peas. Did I have a pea?
And some procedures have become so streamlined and so routine and so well understood that they do cost less than the more problematic, you know, issue of bringing you down into, you know, anesthesia and back out again. Because that is a complex process.
Well, it is, and certainly you want them to bring you back out of it. That's, you know, I'll put
you
under
for
free,
really,
but it's
going
to cost you, you know, a grand to get you out of it.
Yeah,
It costs you $1,000 to wake you up. But no,
that's mafia anesthesia.
it's free to go under. It's going to cost a lot of money to come out of it. Although it turned out in my research, the little research I did before I called my daughter, is that for carpal tunnel now you can be awake for it, mm-hmm. and I was. Not given a general anesthetic, but just a local, but I was still out for it. I was like propofol or something like that. But anyway, we're getting off topic.
But you're right. You can't just get emotional about things because, well, it's just putting me to sleep. There is a process behind that. There is research that goes into it. That is important. It's important to, you know, drive innovation to, you know, to have these things cost different prices and to, I guess to just spawn that innovation for the next person that wants to create a medication that maybe is easier to put you under or...
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and one of the things that is really important for us to understand as patients when we go into the system is that as lay people from the outside, some things that on the surface look really simple are not. And some things that look really complicated are not. And so sometimes we have to be educated so that we understand, well, this is where the difficulty really is, because we don't recognize it. Because we're not experts in that way.
Right. It's all about education. It's all about learning what you need to know to make the best decision for you.
Well, you brought up something earlier, Carissa, that I want to take back to something I used to tell people when I would talk about do speaking engagements about the healthcare system and, you know, kind of how it's messed up. And I want you to tell me whether you think I'm like, you know, wacko or not, because I might be entirely wacko about this, but I think I'm right. People talk about the lack of price transparency, right? They don't know what the cost is going to be. And like you said earlier, you know, don't assume that your doctor knows either, right? Well, but at some point in time, you're going to get a bill from that doctor for whatever they did for you. And it's a little disingenuous, I think, on the doctor's part to say, yeah, I have no idea what I'm going to charge you for the thing I'm going to do for you, right? You know, doc, you kind of have to know, right? If I go to an orthopedic surgeon, he's going to perform this carpal tunnel release on my wrist, I would expect him to generally know what that's going to cost, right? So if a doctor isn't forthcoming with that information, you should be, well, as Kevin would say, I think the word he used in the last podcast was implacable, right? Don't give up on that. Okay, doc, if you don't know, who in your office can I talk to, right?
And that may be more likely because, you know, often the physician may have kind of a ballpark price, but depending on what their practice or the hospital or the organization is negotiating with different insurers, they may have 15 different prices.
Okay,
that's charging.
But you're absolutely right. And so that goes back to the point I was going to make, which I had a long way of getting there, so I didn't actually get to my point. But my point was that, you know, people ask about that price transparency. How do I know what stuff costs? What I say is call your doctor's office or your doctor. Get the list of the CPT codes or the, you know, the procedure codes that they're going to perform on you, and then call your insurance and say, okay, what are you going to reimburse them for this? Because that's what ultimately they're going to charge you. So, you know, this gets back into, like in your case, Carissa, who's your customer, right? Because it sounds like the application is really designed to help patients. But of course, the patient isn't individually paying for those procedures. Somebody else is, right? Their insurance company or their self-insured employer or whoever. So when you're out sort of promoting this product that you have, which sounds like it's really cool, where does a person get it? How do they acquire this tool?
Right. So when I was first, you know, just telling everybody about this and just really trying to get my voice heard on the problem that patients were facing, I learned something fascinating that I hadn't considered before as a nurse, that my patients are also out there in the workforce. So there's somebody else that cares about their health, not just me. So I started talking to employers, and what I found beyond the self-insured companies like you're speaking of that maybe have a little bit higher numbers where they can negotiate a little bit better on those prices, we have 70% of, you know, the country in small business. They don't have the numbers to negotiate that price. They care a lot about their employees as well, not just from a productivity standpoint and bottom line standpoint, but, you know, also just the being able to attract those employees and keep them engaged and making them feel like they're important. What we found were, you know, with the insurance prices going up so high, that most of these places have an insurance policy that has such a high deductible and such high copay costs. Their employees just aren't using it. So they're underinsured is what we call that, right? So I might have insurance, and I was actually just speaking to a lady the other day who had insurance. Her aunt had insurance, but didn't want to go to the doctor when she started having some complications, some pain, and thought, you know, there's no way I'm going to the doctor. It's going to cost me too much money out of pocket. I'll just drink more water. It was a UTI. I'll just drink more water. I'll just take care of it myself because I know it's going to cost too much. She ended up passing away at home from sepsis because, you know, she needed to be seen. But if we're not allowing them a resource to actually be seen, if it costs so much to go see your provider that you're just doing nothing, what kind of effect is that going to have on us in, you know, 10 or 15 years from now?
Well, cost is always, I think, everybody considers it a deterrent, right? So if something's expensive, then what they really want you to do is ask, well, what could we do instead that costs less,
exactly.
right? Not avoid it altogether. And this is, I think, where we get into trouble is that, you know, I talk to people like Kevin who have chronic conditions who are getting infusible drugs that we all know are very, very expensive. And, you know, I had patients tell me, well, I wasn't feeling sick, so I didn't come in. No, that's not how the drug works. It really works as a preventative. It's supposed to keep you from getting sick, not solve the problem once you get sick. And then when you explain that to them and say, look, if you go off your protocol, if you go off the every 6 week or 8 week cycle that you're on and you wait too long, you may have to start over again because these are live antibodies and there's an induction period and things like that you have to go back through. But you also have to clear your system of whatever is still in there before you start another induction phase. And so it gets really, really complicated. But I understand, I can tell you, I mean, just from personal experience, in 2017, before Infusion Express was big enough to have a big corporate policy, my wife and I, we were still paying for our youngest daughter at the time, we paid over $2,000 a month in premiums and had a family deductible of something like $5,000 or $6,000. And literally, I had to spend... Think about that, right? It's like $24,000 a year in premiums and then a $5,000 deductible. It's almost $30,000 that I had to spend before I got a dollar's worth of care.
Right.
And I could see why, I mean, most people couldn't afford $2,000 a month premiums, let alone the $5,000 deductible that went with it. But this is the system we have today. And how people deal with that, you know, I don't understand. I mean, it's so confusing to me and so daunting to me that to have, you know, something like what you're doing with your software solution help people through this, it's got to be a godsend for folks.
Yeah, we definitely hope so. So how that kind of solves that problem there, you know, because I think I've just talked about the nursing side of it and bringing some resources together, but we've really gone out and found these awesome partners, these people that are really trying to build solutions like price transparency, you know, teledoctors, telemedicine, nutrition, my directives that, you know, are always there for you. So it's not all of a sudden when something happens, you're trying to figure out, you know, what your wishes are or what your loved one's wishes are. So we've pulled all of that together in these partnerships all in one place. So if your employer is paying for us, then you've got access now to a physician through our platform. You've got access to specialists. You've got access to the nurses. You've got access to our pharmacy partners to price shop and compare to tools that will help you, you know, be able to kind of estimate your costs before going into a specific hospital for a procedure. So you can kind of, you know, it's not shocking when you get the bill. So it's just giving that access to people so they don't just feel like, you know, like you said, it's so expensive. What's the point?
We definitely have to have a conversation after this because we are so complimentary. One of the things that I'm really interested in is, from where you stand now, what's been your biggest surprise?
Probably that people that are not coming at this from a clinician standpoint or with any kind of healthcare experience, whether it be their personal experience they've gone through, or an actual business, or, you know, just being in the industry, is how much people separate the helping patients from cost reduction. They go hand in hand. If we actually help patients and we actually help them get empowered to improve their outcomes, this reduces costs. But it seems to be this, you know, yin or yang thing that people are...
Well, don't get me started.
Not just financial costs.
No, yes. I mean, it's so much, and people are still so focused on creating these solutions that have nothing to do with the patient. So that has probably been the most shocking thing to me, is just the lack of emphasis on the patient.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, quite frankly, one of the reasons we started Infusion Express was because the entire... industry of providing infusions for people with chronic diseases were, well, almost at the patient's expense. I mean, it was like, well, you're sick.
Yeah.
We're going to treat you pretty poorly. We're going to charge you out the wazoo and quit your complaining.
And
you're sick.
You're going to feel privileged.
Oh, yeah. You should feel, you know, but I do want to make, and this, I don't want to get political at all. This is not a, this is,
oh, no.
Although we could.
Famous
I mean,
last
it's,
words.
It's almost funny, like, I almost spend more time talking about healthcare than I do politics now, so I know what's, you know, we're spending more money on. But, you know, there's a lot of talk amongst policymakers about, you know, how expensive pharmaceuticals have become. And they pick on biologics almost exclusively because mm-hmm. they are very expensive. And, you know, what I think that there's another side to that story, right? Biologics by themselves are exactly the kind of targeted therapies we've always wanted, right? They're not chemicals in a test tube that you're, you know, putting into your body that create a toxic reaction beyond whatever curative effect it's supposed to have. You know, the old saying about the cure is worse than the disease. And that was true of a lot of,
right.
of therapies that were based on toxic chemicals, right? Biologics are the most targeted. The reason they have to be infused is they can't go through your stomach because they're so volatile, the, right. you know, and so they're live antibodies, so they would get eaten up in the acid in your stomach. So it either has to be injected or it has to be infused. But what, when I hear about everybody complaining about the cost of it, I think, well, what's the alternative?
Yeah.
You know, what do you get in return? If I said, look, I don't want to spend $60,000 a year on this drug. So, like in Kevin's case, Tysabri, it's $5,000 every 4 weeks. So, in effect, you're going to spend,
you know,
60 grand a year. Right. You're going to spend 60 grand a year. But what's the alternative? I mean, I think
it's that, trimming the healthcare system back where we're spending money on the right things, too.
Well, that, yes. too. I mean, it's like me with the three doctors for thiamine. You know, it's.
Yeah, that's the idea. We get so focused on short-term efficiency that we forget effectiveness and to look at effectiveness in a broad sense. You know, as we're heading into the end of this section, I want to say thank you for putting up with us and our jabbering back and forth and being brave enough to get words in edgewise and important words too. So I wanted to ask one final question of you before we get there. What do you wish we had asked you?
Well, being a nurse and on the clinician and bedside, you know, history, I think that it's important to remember that this doesn't all just fall on the providers or, you know, this is a systemic problem. I mean, the suicide rate for physicians right now is through the roof. The rate on burnout for nurses through the roof. I mean, most of these people gave a lot of years of their life to dedicated to learning so we could help people. And the system, you know, just doesn't allow that. And it burns a lot of people out. And, you know, as far as nurses, of course, are dear to my heart. One thing that I see this affecting in the nursing side of things and with my fellow nurses are all those nurses that gave for 5 or 6 years that really cared, but then they're burned out, right? So they keep their license, but they had to do something else. It was too high of a cost for them. I'm talking to a lot of those nurses and kind of bringing them back into the healthcare game because now we're giving them away to actually practice nursing in a way that they thought they were going to get a practice, you know, when they were first going into the industry. So there's this huge crisis with, you know, with lack of nursing and lack of nurses. And you know, I really hope that a side effect of this is being able to give them a voice and pulling them back into patient care.
I wish our listeners could see the big spontaneous smile that got on my face as you were talking about that.
Caressa, thank you. I think that, you know, we, first of all, we appreciate you being here. And the information is outstanding. I think that anybody who's had to deal with the healthcare system can certainly relate to the things that we talked about. Those of you who haven't had the pleasure of interacting with the healthcare system, but one day probably will, I would highly encourage you to check out Modern Health. And if your employer isn't currently using a product like theirs, I certainly would encourage you to, you know, advocate for that within your company, because I think it's, again, it's a complicated quagmire of frustrations and disappointments and things that make you angry, as Caressa suggested right from the outset. And so she's gone on a mission to help solve that problem. And we certainly thank you for being here and encourage you to go forth and prosper.
Thank you once more, Caressa.
I very much appreciate you having me, appreciate being here. And like you said, you know, you may not be a patient now, but none of us, you know, don't have an expiration date, and all of us will be patients eventually. So it's a problem for everyone.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well.
ChronicCal.com.
And we're back one more time. You knew you couldn't get rid of us. This is Dr. Kevin Payne with Don Peterson. And, you know, Caressa said something there at the very end that really struck me, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart, and that is that this is a systemic issue, and there are challenges on every side, and sometimes as patients or as caregivers or as loved ones or as physicians or as insurers, we only see our narrow little slice of a really dysfunctional system. And we forget that we need to find more ways to kind of reach across those boundaries and figure out ways that we can help each other help everybody.
Well, I think it's profound, you know, that Caressa was talking about how physicians and nurses are reaching their boiling point, and in fact boiling over too often. And you know, what they, I guess, are dealing with is the same thing that the patient's dealing with on the other end of that spectrum, right?
Yes.
They're having a hard time dealing with the fact that they only get to spend a few minutes with each patient. They're not able to provide the level of care, the quality of care that they'd like to. And so, you know, and that's true, I think, in my experience with the system. It's systemic, and it's not just stacked against patients.
Right.
And, you know, what I think in the long run, what we really need an analysis on is what's causing the stress on both ends of the spectrum. What's happening in the middle that's making both ends of the spectrum? Because, look, I know good doctors and good nurses who really just want to take care of people, and I know patients can understand that this is their job, and it's not, you know, it's not their job to get emotionally involved with us, but they can't help themselves, as Caressa testified to. But what in the middle of this spectrum between patients and providers is creating the stress? And maybe that's a topic for a future podcast. We'll go get some guests who can represent both ends of that spectrum, perhaps, and maybe some people who can represent the middle of that spectrum. Maybe it's the insurance companies or the big hospital executives or whoever it is. There's an answer to this problem. There may not be a solution to it, but we may better understand what's causing it. And I think it's important for us to get into that, because to me, it's important. It's the stress that we talk about. It's the advocacy that everybody talks about. It's the frustration with the healthcare system, the cost, everything else that goes along with it. That's dogging everybody, not just you as patients, or certainly not just providers who are trying to take care of patients. But it's something in the middle
is
messing this up.
It is, and it's one of those things that I will just shamelessly mention that I do. You know, it's one of those topics I do talk about in my book, Your Life Lived Well, And one of the things that we have to understand is, and that's why my company, Chronic Cal, doesn't just provide services to those of us with chronic illness, but also to their loved ones and caregivers, and to medical and therapeutic and health and wellness professionals. And you know, because I did some training for employees at Infusion Express.
You did, and it was just to give you background on exactly how that happened. There was a new drug came out for patients with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. The drug was called Radicava, or is called Radicava, and it was for anybody who had an ALS diagnosis. And you know, it was one of the few conditions that we were treating that were actually considered terminal. Right, so Crohn's disease and rheumatoid arthritis and MS and things like that. Look, the outcome is you're trying to improve their quality of life for, you know, the dealing with that condition. Whereas with ALS, I mean, it was, you know, 3 to 5 year terminal sentence. And so the caregivers, the families were much more involved in what we were doing. And we really felt like we needed to understand how best to talk to those patients, how best to talk to their caregivers and their family about that condition. So, yeah, we brought Dr. Payne in, and he got on the phone. We did, 6 or 7 webinars with our staff, and I know everybody enjoyed learning, and it helped us in dealing with, you know, that group of patients, and it was a very successful deployment for us, and we're grateful to you for that.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's really important to realize that so much of what we're dealing with is not endemic to a particular diagnosis. You know, stress is stress, and all of these positions in the system are stressful, and there's pain involved, physical and emotional pain. There's disconnection, there's social issues, I mean, all of those things. And if we understand each of our roles better, and if we understand our places in the healthcare system better, then, you know, we have a chance to have better tools in order to deal with those things. And, you know, Caressa mentioned the astronomical heartbreaking suicide rates that we see amongst populations of medical professionals. And these are the kinds of tools and understanding that can help them as well.
Well, as the audience knows, I have a daughter who's in residency right now, and she's got about 4 years left to go. And, you know, her mental well-being, her mental health is extremely important to me. And I certainly don't want her to feel like this job is thankless or create so much stress that she doesn't want to be in it. Like, you know, Caressa mentioned the nurses who have given up practice and gone and done something else, and how she's trying to bring them back in. And I think, you know, what we need to do is get providers, doctors, and nurses back into the business of giving patient care and doing it in a way that they feel good about doing it and accomplished for all the training and commitment they made to be a medical professional.
Well, people shouldn't feel like they're being punished for choosing a helping profession.
Well, especially when you look at the sacrifice they have to make to get there.
Exactly.
You know, she's 27, almost 27 years old, and she has been, you know, nose in a book for the last, you know, 10 years of her life. And for the 5 years prior to that, from eighth grade on, this is what her dream was, to be a doctor. So, you know, I fully support her desire to be a doctor. I had a lot of friends, because I work in the industry, who said, you know, you didn't talk her out of that? No, I would never try to talk my child out of something they were committed to doing from the time they were in seventh or eighth grade. On the other hand, I certainly want her to thrive in that profession and not suffer as a result of it. So I hope we can, in the next couple of episodes, get into this issue of why the ends of the spectrum, the patients to the other end on the provider or physician side or caregiver side, you know, why is there so much stress? Why is there so much discord, and so much frustration? And
because it's so opaque and there's so much misunderstanding, there's undeserved resentment that builds up on either side. And it's just really unfortunate. Because everyone needs to feel appreciated for what they're doing, and patients need to feel like they have a voice in their care. You know, as we've talked about on previous episodes and has come up here, there are a lot of systemic issues that are only going to be solved with some better understanding and people that are representing different stakeholders getting together and saying enough is enough.
Well, and I'm hoping that's what we unpack here.
Exactly.
This whole notion, and we keep saying it, I say it, you say it, we heard Caressa say it, a systemic problem. Well, damn it, somebody's that system, and that system needs to be broken up in a way that we can better understand in a more granular fashion what about the system is making this so difficult for people on both ends of it. And so, you know, it's not just enough for me that we're going to sweep it under this great big rug called a systemic problem. The system is us, or us is the system. I'm not sure which way to say that. We need to unpack that.
We need to get to the bottom of that. That's what I think we're doing, you know, piece by piece. And so I think this was, you know, this conversation today was another good lens on what is fast becoming this overarching theme on our show.
Thank you, Kevin. Another great episode.
Don.
This has been the Chronic Life Podcast, where we live life well. Join the conversation on social media at Chronic Life Pod or at chroniclifepodcast.com.